Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Speaking of interviews, there's an interview of Chris Cillizza in Connecticut Magazine. It's rather lengthy. It's mostly a question and answer. How do you feel about the article?
I thought it was good. I mean, as a reporter, I never trust other reporters. You know, when they're like, yeah, no, it's just really just a friendly piece about, you know, that always feels like a recipe for disaster.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
When last we left Chris Cillizza, he was bemoaning the Nationals grounds crew's inability to cover the field last night, resulting in a suspension of days and days and days. Makes no sense, right?
A season saver, if you will.
Yeah, because it keeps the Orioles from sweeping them and probably keeps the Beltway Mitterrand, Sean Doolittle, on the team, though I would vote. If it's my vote, I vote him off the island, absolutely. He is awful. He's awful this year. He's got one out pitch. It's a high strike. If you lay off it, he's forced to come lower into the zone.
Full
right,
count,
Michael?
Full count, wait and for something, boom. Drive it.
And then boom, and then he's done. So whatever, however good he was last year, and he was very, very good, he is equally bad at the moment. The Nats are worse at the moment. I don't want to get too local. There are some news stories, and we will have Michael Wilbon on to talk to them beyond the golf. Michael and I will talk about the golf now, but the two larger news stories in sports at the moment are, it appears now that college football is on the brink of saying no, that the Power Five conferences are going to say, I don't know that we can do it. I'm not sure that we can do it. Maybe we can push to the spring. That's sort of up in the air, but that is certainly in play. And the other story is the Astros went out yesterday and hit four different Oakland players. And you say, the Astros, why would they hit people? They're the ones being hit. Well, that's the team of Mike Fiers. And Mike Fiers is the Astros' public enemy number one for doing what? For telling the truth about what happened with the Astros. And so there was a bench-clearing brawl. I mean, I get all of that. I don't think the Astros will hit. I don't know how you feel, Michael. I don't think the Astros will hit another person all year outside of an Oakland person. Or even an Oakland person now.
Yeah, this is just an extension of what you saw through the late winter where baseball doesn't do anything. And now baseball players who've been doing this for, I don't know, 100 plus years, take action and take it into their own hands.
This is what they do. These are the unwritten rules of baseball that everybody who plays baseball understands. So let us get to the largest sporting event yesterday. And the largest sporting event,
for
I
months.
Think, to this point since the coronavirus reared up. And that was the PGA Championship, which is normally not the first of the championships. Normally is referred to by the CBS crew as Glory's last shot. Has been fourth and least relevant for a long period of time. And I'm not gonna declare its relevance. But it was a great tournament in the sense that nobody ran away with it ever. And at one point yesterday, there were like seven or eight people on the back
starting nine. Starting the back nine.
On the back nine, tied at minus 10 for the lead in a major championship. What were your thoughts about it?
Well, the first thing you have to consider is just where this tournament was held. And this is just outside of the city limits of San Francisco, or what you'd consider to be the downtown city limits. And you looked at what was a huge outbreak earlier in the spring, and you just kept wondering, how are they going to play this tournament here? Unfortunately, the way the four majors stacked up, three of them happened to be right around virus epicenters.
It had to be postponed.
Through the early summer, late spring timetable, and you wondered, they just can't get this done. So the fact that they were able to hold this tournament, and I don't know about you, but I was surprised to see the amount of people on the grounds. It didn't just seem
we
like
we have to talk to Chuck Culpepper about
media.
That.
This seemed like people who are clapping, who are taking video. Maybe the lines are a little bit blurred, but there was definitely more of that. You did see the people who lived just outside or were outside of the walls cheering on Morikawa going, go Bears. And all that.
Because he's a Cal kid. Cal Golden Bears.
You asked Sanzi about this last week, which was, what would your feelings be if you could only win the PGA? Or where does that rank? And so much of it comes back to where is it held? And then what does the tournament turn out to be? So if you go back to, say, someone like Davis Love, who wins a PGA at Winged Foot and what that meant around his career and the family, all of a sudden that's a very meaningful, memorable tournament. If you think about this one, the way that Colin Morikawa wins it on the back nine, and who it was against and where it was within the news cycle of our times right now, this is going to be one of those memorable PGAs.
He hit two shots that would be considered great in anybody's standard of great. One was a chip on 14 that gave him the lead for the first time and made those of us sitting together and watching it say, well, I wonder if that won the tournament. And then he won the tournament. He backed it up with a drive on a drivable 294-yard, not drivable for me, drivable for pro golfers, 294-yard par 4 16 that was on the right side. If it bounces right, it's going into a trap. It
took bunker short-sided.
Yeah, it took a left bounce and rolled to within 8 feet. He did not have to make the eagle. The birdie is conceded, and then he's up by two, but he makes the eagle, and he's up by three at that point, and the tournament is over. And this kid, and there we'll talk to Chuck
23 about years this. Old.
There are three kids out there. There's Matthew Wolf, there's Victor Hovland, there's Colin Morikawa. They have all won already on the PGA Tour, and this is the first major. This is only the second major this kid played in, and he won, and he looked terrific. His problem has been in the past, it's a recent past because he's a kid, his problem has been putting. I don't know if Michael is putting. In basketball, you can get to be a better shooter. Shooting's important. You can learn to shoot. In golf, can you get to be a better putter?
You can always improve, but you can't necessarily be a good putter. So Phil Mickelson is a great example of this. Late in his career, most people start losing their touch on the greens. He's always had that short game. He made himself a better putter.
Right.
And if you look at Morikawa, the thing you always notice is he stands over the ball a long, long time.
He does.
Time. Now, traditionally, someone who is such a good ball striker tends to have a weakness maybe on the greens. You see this with Rory, and it's why someone like Rory can ride those waves. And for Morikawa, you have to come back to that putt because it's the missed 3.5-footer to extend the playoff in the first event after the restart. And then you see where he then went. He improved it. He then gets that huge playoff victory over Justin Thomas.
He had a 21-footer.
He had to validate a birdie putt after Thomas dropped in, I think it was 50. About a 50-footer.
So what you go, we call you go Tony back, Kornheiser
you
range.
Go back to those two shots on the back nine. We were talking to Nigel before, this casual golf fan. To get someone like him to stay juiced over a major, you have to have what are these almost Tiger Woods-like shots. About a month ago, everyone was talking about how this kid has won now more times than has missed cuts. And you look at that chip in on 14, that becomes the tournament changing.
Yeah.
And then you look at the drive followed up by the eagle putt, that becomes career defining and career changing. And it's just amazing to see how quickly these young players are not just winning, but contending every single week. And part of it is they are the crop of players who they're playing every single week they can right now. And even saw it with Matt Wolf, who made a late run and had a couple of
had the lead, had tied for the lead.
Had a couple of
he went 3-2-3-3.
But you can see how quickly they are able to change the scope of a tournament. But it comes back to setup, that drivable par four. Paul Casey said this in his comments after. Credit to the PGA of America for creating these dramatic moments in major championships.
So we have a situation for those people who do like golf. We have a situation where in a period of time that feels like a blink of an eye, eight majors will be played. You know, I mean, we're going to have four. We're not going to have the British Open.
We will have 11 months.
Yeah, we will have the U.S. Open, and we will have the Masters in November, and then we will have the Masters in April.
Masters back-to-back in 4.5 months.
You could, if you won two Masters in a row, people would forget about Colin Morikawa winning this, unless he wins the Masters. But the Masters is a different thing. A different type of player is put in play at the Masters. This was fun to watch, and what I don't know, and Nigel, I don't really know if you saw this. When they went to break, they often showed that beautiful shot of the fog in San Francisco and then skyline of San Francisco behind that, which is, you know, of the skylines in America, New York and San Francisco are the most famous and the most sort of revered and evocative. And I don't know if that was ever a live shot except the first time. And I don't know if they kept going back to it, but it was stunningly effective, didn't you think?
It was atmospheric. And when you think about that fog, we still have that marine layer existing over all of us. And to have this tournament going on underneath that and to try and do it in the safest way possible did mean something. I think it's impossible before you get out of this to not mention the other big story, which
DeChambeau
and Koepka in terms of people who did not win.
Yep.
If you were looking at the leaderboard after 54 holes and you see the look in Koepka's eyes and just the disdain in his voice as he was talking about DJ, you thought, okay.
So Dustin Johnson is an irrelevant guy. Dustin Johnson, who is he? How many has he won?
It's hard to win the second. And kudos to Rory for backing it up, saying, just to clear this up, DJ's a great player to win one. You have to be a hell of a player, but He has 21 tour victories, which is roughly three times what you have. And Koepka was a non-factor after the first hole. He misses probably a 15, 18-footer for birdie, and he doesn't even make the telecast.
I just spilled my water.
I was going to go deep into dive, but
I opened a bottle of water and spilled it all over my notes ruining the ink. And now
those are beautiful notes. What are you going to ask Chuck?
Leaving me adrift as to all I could ask Chuck is, "What's your birthday?"
At least you didn't spill the salad dressing like you do on your shorts.
Yes, I have this problem with shorts that I have that I tend to. I'm not the world's sloppiest eater, but I'm not the neatest eater either.
Oh, go figure. You'd over a sink.
You know, and I spill salad dressing on shorts, which is impossible to get out. And I put on a pair of shorts, and I've washed them, and I've dried them, and I've ironed them, and they look terrible.
Never apply the heat. So I've tried to do the old trick with them. And so before you do anything, before you wash it, apply some of that, you know, the heavy-duty palm olive or whatever the dish soap is, and just put droplets on it and let it sit to work the way out.
We don't like the word droplets lately.
Oh, yeah, don't share your droplets. when he's talking about salad dressing, we're talking about the old-school Paul Newman. Shake it, it goes everywhere.
Yeah, Paul Newman salad dressing, classic Italian with olive oil. Doesn't everybody use that? Am I the only one? I can't be the only one.
If they don't, they should. That's clearly the best salad dressing.
And I have so many memories as a kid where you'd have those wooden salad bowls.
Yes, lovely.
And you wouldn't let us wash it because you thought the oil seasoned it.
Yes. Well, that's what I was told when I was one third of your age and bought those. I've had wooden. Yeah, I have them, but they're not in the house. I don't know where they are. I don't know where really anything is. And I'm really upset that I spilled everything. I'm really upset. All right, we will take a break. We will come back. Michael Wilbon will join us when we return. I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show. Tony Kornheiser
Show. This is the Harry's ad. This is new copy. It writes, or they write, someone writes, how much could you save in 1 year by switching to Harry's? Now, this is intriguing. Enough to buy 26 cups of coffee in New York City. Enough for 3 deep dish pizza dinners in Chicago. Enough to pay 6 months of your Netflix subscriptions. How? Harry's delivers high quality razor blades as low as $2 each, a fraction of the price of the leading brand, and saving you hundreds of dollars over time. Now the critical word there is time. How much time to save hundreds of dollars? But I guess that's true. You can get a free Harry's trial set delivered to your doorstep by going to harrys.com/TonyK. Harry's is a return to the essential quality durable blades at a fair price. Again, just $2 a blade. They've cut out the middleman manufacturing blades in their German blade factory that's been honing with an N, precision blades for a century. Harry's is super convenient. Blade refills are delivered directly to your door on your schedule with or without a subscription. Harry's has all your grooming needs covered in one stop. You can get blades, I didn't know this, hair care and shower products all on harrys.com. I didn't know that. And just like your blades or their blades, Harry's is committed to providing premium products without breaking the bank. And you can feel a little bit better about your purchase because 1% of the proceeds are set aside for nonprofit organizations devoted to helping provide access to better mental health care for men and veterans. That's nice. To support those who need it most right now, Harry's is donating $1 million worth of shaving supplies to hospitals across the United States, and that's nice as well. Listeners of my show can redeem their Harry's trial set at harrys.com/TonyK. You will get a weighted ergonomic handle for a firm grip, 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and a trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel with aloe to keep your skin hydrated, I add parenthetically, it smells great, and a travel blade cover to keep your razor dry and easy to grab on the go. Go to harrys.com/TonyK to start shaving and saving today. Notice the rhyming pattern.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Get set, get cracking. Come forward, folks, don't back in. In Seattle, nothing's lacking. 3 cheers for the Kraken.
Is this Dan Byrne?
This is indeed Dan Byrne.
And what is the name of this song?
This song is called The Kraken. He says, hi, Tony. Here it is, the answer to all our prayers, a song for the new Seattle Kraken of the NHL. Best, Dan Byrne.
Both Wilbon and I hate that name. Mike, you hate the name, don't you?
Hate it.
It's terrible. It's truly terrible. It's an invented, nonsensical, awful name. It's just so stupid. Michael Wilbon joins us. There's a lot of things. Before we get to the golf, I do want to get to two stories that have bubbled up that are big stories. And one, and you and I have talked about this at length, that I think that the Big Ten, me personally, I think the Big Ten is the best academic and athletic conference overall. Maybe I'm wrong, but I've always sort of thought that. And I always thought that if there was one conference that would be the first to say, I don't know about football, I'm not sure we can do this to our students, I thought it'd be the Big Ten. Now there seems to be a boomlet going on, Mike, with a lot of conferences meeting and maybe getting to that same conclusion. What are your thoughts?
Well, they met. They had a conference yesterday. I think it was the Big Ten presidents. Yeah. And while they didn't decide anything, Tony, I expect this season, I expect college football to be canceled this week, or postponed.
Yes.
This season to be moved. They're going to attempt to move it to the spring. And I'm fine with that attempt. I'm fine with it. I don't think it's realistic. I mean, you're not going to keep college students away from each other. And we're talking about the entire community.
Right.
You talk about the Big Ten. So the Big Ten has, I'm going to say, two of the four largest school populations in America.
Penn State?
I'm gonna say Minnesota.
Oh, okay, and Ohio State.
I would say that Arizona State has got to be one of those biggest, but Minnesota's got to be one of them, and then Penn State and Ohio State. We got three of them.
Yeah.
So I don't see it. I think this, and once the Big Ten does that, then effectively even the SEC will have to go along with that. I think you're looking at a season that's going to be postponed within the next 48 hours, and maybe a lot less than that.
I suspect that the SEC will hold out as longer than anyone and as long as it can. But if all the other Power Five conferences go, they're going to go too, I think.
If one goes, they have to. If the Big Ten goes, they have to go.
Yeah, that's
the
what
SEC
I think.
The SEC cannot, they're not going to be able to hold out in this case, I don't think, Tony.
Now, this is different, and we should point out it is utterly different than the NFL where players are played. And these are different decisions. These kids are not paid. Don't tell me about the scholarships. They're not paid.
They're not. It's already, look, the NCAA is already in a position of looking like just a clown, to the point where I think the NCAA is on the verge of extinction anyway. And they're going to make these kids, they're going to, really? So you're going to make kids play when you look at the world we're in right now.
Yeah, I don't think so. There's
zero chance of it. Zero now. I mean, yeah. Before I was saying 5-10%, zero chance. I think the season could be called today.
Yeah, I think that's possible. The other story that caught my eye, and I'm not going to say it surprised me because Mike Fiers is a member of the Oakland Athletics, and he blew the whistle on Houston where he played. But the Astros hit, I think, four different Oakland guys, and finally there was a brawl. And I was saying before you got on the air, I don't think the Astros will hit anybody again, and I don't think they'll even hit Oakland again. But I think this was a message to Oakland that this is what you did to us, and we hate your guts. Did you sense that same thing?
No, I didn't think of it that way.
Oh, really?
But now that you lay it out that way, it makes sense. I don't, the whole Astros thing, I'm just tired of it. I'm tired of them. I don't pay attention to it. It's like, I'm thinking of some other episode, Tony, in recent sports history where you understand there are layers of it. You understand that something's going to happen. Here's why it's going to happen. And then I tuned out the Astros. What's sad for me is I tuned out baseball this weekend. Tuned it out. Because my team is not even playing.
Right.
And you had this. You had this last week.
Yes. Yes,
and baseball is
because my team is better when it doesn't play.
Well,
my team
is
stinks
when it does play because they're 10-3. But it doesn't make it. I tuned out baseball this week, which is
so
sad.
They were scheduled for the Cardinals this week.
Yes, and now the Cardinals have had today's game canceled as well.
The Cardinals
are not playing today. They were in a new week. Still not eligible.
Are you more or less confident that baseball will finish whatever season it's got.
I'm not confident at all.
You're not.
This goes back to Buster Olney. Buster Olney said 2 weeks before baseball ultimately did start that he gave it like a 5% chance of finishing. 5%. That may have been strong, but I mean, Buster knows what he's talking about with baseball. This week's covers. And it looks like he was right, Tony. I don't know how you can't do this every week. But that's happening every week. Every week. There's like two teams that can't play. How long can you have this?
So let me ask you a different question. This is a feelings question. And I ask you this because I appreciate the position you were in. You waited, as a Cubs fan, you actually waited your entire life for the Cubs to win a World Series, which is different than in Washington. You waited literally your entire life. The next year, when the Cubs were not as good, when the Cubs had failures, they were still a good team, but they were not as good.
Got to the NLCS.
Right. Yeah. So I'm looking, my disappointment level in the Nats, and I understand it's just 2 weeks, is just enormous. I feel terrible that they, you know, it looks to me they can't repeat. They just look very bad right now. When the Cubs were not what they were, how did you feel in those moments? Were you satisfied that you had won the World Series, or was that in the past and you cared only about the moment?
They're both. I mean, you of course I was satisfied I won a World Series because I'd waited almost 60 years.
Yeah.
But the way it happened, you know, the way they won it, and I was there for it. And I understood. I thought they had a shot to win again because they did, because they got to the NLCS again. They got there 3 straight years. So it wasn't quite like this. There wasn't. I mean, they had a chance. They beat the Nationals in the playoffs. They I don't remember who we lost to. I guess we lost to the Dodgers, and we had beaten the Dodgers the year before. We'd beaten the Dodgers and the Giants the year before. So we played them, didn't beat them. Okay, but we were in there, you know. And we didn't have. First of all, Tony, your disappointment starts with the way the Nationals don't even get to defend in a real way.
No, they don't. No, they don't.
They don't have the glory of, you know, coming out that next season and having everybody line up on the foul line and being introduced to an entire stadium. And
they didn't get the applause that they should have because of what's going on. Yeah,
I had that. I had that full thing, and the Cubs were relevant for three. They're still relevant, but it was disappointing last year because they just fell apart a little bit. But then they come out this year with the same nucleus, and they jump off to the best start in the National League.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like, what's happening to the Nationals right now? That would just kill me.
Awful.
My team is reigning champions, and you don't get to act like it or be treated like it.
And you can't beat the Orioles. You can't beat the Orioles.
It's not a season. But it's not a season.
My disappointment is more honestly profound than I thought it would be.
No, I get it because this is the Cubs didn't have this.
They were able
to go about the business of being a
defending
champion.
Of defending. That's right.
Of defending and being it, being called it every day. It's feeling like these guys are defending champions and they're still good. So I do feel for Washingtonians in that sense. Absolutely, Tony.
Let's get to the golf. There's nothing as good on television if you like golf as West Coast majors because you get to watch them till 10 o'clock at night. I mean, you know, you get to sit in your house when it's too dark to go out and do anything, and you get to watch television, you get to watch the golf. What did you think of the major? Are you okay with the result? What did you think of all of it?
I'm more than okay with the result. I'm thrilled with the result. Thrilled. I sat and watched a lot of the post-game with Morikawa, and what an impressive kid he is.
Mm-hmm.
I do mean kid.
Oh, yeah.
He's like the youngest guy. The only other guys who've won at that stage were Jack and Tiger.
That's right.
There's a third one. I forget who the
other. Rory.
Is he the third?
Rory. No,
yeah,
Rory.
He's the fourth.
Yeah.
It's insane. It was great. And the field he held off. Look, Tony, I don't. My history of golf is not as deep as my history of baseball, which I go back to. When I was 4 years old, I go back to 1962 with baseball and understanding it and feeling it. With golf, I have become appreciative of history, and I can recite it, but I didn't feel it. I didn't grow up watching Jack and Arnie, which I'm old enough to have done. I watched it kind of. I wasn't emotionally involved. I'm saying that to say that the field that's out there now, man, the field is impressive.
Yeah.
These guys can win. They can beat you. Like, so when Tiger first had his, you know, walk-away issues in 2009, 10, 11, I was just, talk about depressed about a sport. I was depressed about a sport because Phil couldn't carry that himself. Phil did fine. He won multiple majors, even though he didn't win the U.S. Open. But he, I mean, fine. And Tiger wasn't there, and it was disappointing. It was disappointing. I'm not to say, I mean, it's not to say there weren't other terrific golfers out there, but it wasn't the same, Tony. And it not only wasn't the same, it was lacking. It ain't lacking. I didn't think about Tiger one time yesterday. I watched Tiger the whole weekend. They had those special groups on. You could go and watch it on ESPN Plus if you wanted to. I did not do that. I watched Tiger and Phil. I rooted for him. And then it was like, okay, that was nice. You guys have a safe flight home. Because now the big stage doesn't include them mostly. Not entirely, mostly. And it's okay because these dudes are good. And they're good in a way that when Speed had the stage for himself for about 2.5 years and Rory had the stage for himself, it wasn't as good. Those guys are one of them. Rory's part of it now. But it's not the same as Morikawa and young Cameron Champ, and Matthew Wolf. And still you've got a transition team. You've got Jason Day. You've got Paul Casey. You've got guys who are established stars who are out there playing well. You got Finau, who's still young. You got guys in their 20s, a whole slew of them, and they're great. Now, and man, I didn't miss anybody. I loved it.
Right.
And so even as somebody who understands that my golf was defined by the end of Nicklaus and Norman and all that, and the beginning of Tiger and Seve in his prime and all that, you know, Nick Price and Faldo, fine. And those guys are Hall of Famers, by the way. But the pack of guys, and maybe you don't feel this way. Maybe you think I'm being, and I'm not, and you know me, Tony, I'm not a prisoner of the moment. I'm just not. Because I believe often that stuff that happened 40 years ago is better in sports.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of really good players. I think if you go, now Phil Mickelson was in his, almost into his mid-30s before he won a major, and he won 5. If you take like age 33 and down, there's some great talent out there because Justin Thomas is part of that.
Yeah.
There's some great, great talent out there. I will ask you this because I know you have called Bryson DeChambeau villainous. Were you more or less impressed with how he went about his business in this major? Because he came close.
No. I mean, you know what? He could be. People talk about the new Greg Norman. He could be that. No, I wasn't. This was his.
66 on Sunday, pretty good.
Okay, how many times was Norman great on the weekend and he didn't win? Norman got knocked out with some punches that were our all-timers.
Yep.
Okay, so no, DeChambeau had no, because this is a golf course, Tony, that yesterday he could have had. He had about 4 or 5 chances to be Morikawa, to make shots and make putts and put himself and establish himself, and no, he didn't. I think the field, because look, I called him villainous, Tony, because I live partially in one golf course community, and I know people on tour. I'm not saying I know them well, but I'm around enough guys on tour and talk to enough people in the golf industry currently to know that he is disliked. Now, he is damn good. He's also disliked. This is a fact. This is not me talking about my feelings, because I didn't even know about this stuff until about a month or so ago, mostly. And, I mean, Tony, Patrick Reed is like Santa Claus compared to this guy, the way players, the industry feels about him. Now, you can only feel that way if somebody's damn good and a threat to win every week. And Bryson DeChambeau is that.
Yes, he is.
That good.
He is that good.
But was I impressed with him yesterday? No.
Okay.
No, I wasn't. There were other guys. There were certainly, and those other young guns, Tony. I mean, Matthew Wolf is 22.
Yeah, Morikawa just turned 23, I think.
23? You know, these guys are all. So when the day started, you thought, okay, well, let's see what happens. I mean, the one guy who blew up yesterday, the shocker,
Koepka,
was Koepka.
Yeah, Koepka. I mean, I thought Dustin Johnson played well enough in the lead to win.
Yes, he did.
I mean, he did. He was fine. He was fine.
Yes,
that this tournament was not. We have seen tournaments lost. This tournament was won.
No, it wasn't just won.
It was
won. Tournament was contested.
Yeah.
This tournament had young dudes out there throwing haymakers.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
This was.
But I'm saying people didn't back up. Koepka backed up. The rest of them were under par.
That's right.
They were under par.
And even guys that I know you're waiting to see what happens. Tony Finau. Tony Finau played well enough.
On Sunday, he finally played well.
He did not shoot 73. He didn't.
No, he did. He
only
did not.
So,
Ricky Fowler didn't shoot 73 because he missed the cut.
Yeah, that's right.
Finau and Fowler.
Darling, Tony, you can be a young darling, and Ricky Fowler is that, and legitimately so. You can be that, and now just get you can get backhanded.
You can. You can.
And
all right.
So I loved it.
Good. All right. I'll talk to you later. Thank
all right,
you.
So.
Michael Wilbon, boys and girls, we will take a break and we will come back. Chuck Culpepper, who covered the tournament for the Washington Post, will join us when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is a song called Keep Moving. Nia Levon is on vocals. Stephen Harley has written and arranged and produced. And he writes, a little going for the TK trifecta. I've had emails read on the show, been TK saluted in a national park wearing a Chatter t-shirt, and now submitting my nephew's first professional song. So this is Wade Harley sending this in for Stephen Harley. So it's
beautiful.
It is beautiful. It's lovely. So happy to have this. Michael, if people want to send in their original music, how do they do it?
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
Chuck Culpepper joins us now. He covered this tournament, and there are a million questions. Michael and I watched so much of this tournament, but let me get to some of the odder questions before we tackle Morikawa and DeChambeau and the implosion of Brooks Koepka. And as we were watching it, Chuck, there seemed to be cheers every once in a while. There seemed to be more people than we're used to in these golf tournaments. There almost seemed to be like a small crowd. Who were those people?
You know, there's volunteers. There's the guest, the players allowed. There's a coach sometimes. There's but I kind of walk among them sometimes, and I think, who are you?
Yeah.
But I remember it was just about the same as the other two tournaments I've been to, the Memorial in Ohio and the Schwab in Fort Worth. And, you know, maybe at the end of the Fort Worth tournament, there were 73 people beside the green. I counted them, I think it was. And then it was about the same yesterday. Sometimes those noises you heard through the TV were from people who were outside the fences on the sidewalk, looking through little gaps in these tarps in the fences, watching. There was a long rows of them on some of the holes.
So what I noticed, this is the first time I noticed this. When a guy hit a good shot, he would wave in acknowledgement to the clapping. And I guess, you know, that was a little bit new for me this year. But it seemed like there were a bunch of people there, most of whom, if not all of whom, were wearing masks. But they were not all, they didn't appear to all be officials, right? They just didn't.
Right. There are PGA officials, and as I said, volunteers and marshals, and there's a lot of carts. There are carts driving everywhere, and it made me wonder, is this the same amount of carts, you know, that are always there, but we don't know it because they're surrounded by people and trying to get around, or is it just... You almost get run over a lot out there just by the carts.
So, carts are the status symbols at these events.
Yeah, if you've got your own
cart,
you're like a stud. You're an important person. Let me use a word that I have been very reluctant to use in other sports, but I'm going to use it now for golf, just on what I've seen lately. There seems to now be a confidence that golf is going to go, that these majors, the remaining two, are going to be played. I mean, I get that sense that there's confidence. Do you get that sense?
I do. That it, like, it's the entire feeling around it, that it's working, and that actually there doesn't seem to be any question at all that it's going to happen. That, you know, we've got Tiger and Phil yesterday talking about how they're going to prepare for Winged Foot in the middle of September and U.S. Open. And it seems clear. I didn't hear a peep of a doubt the entire time.
Do you think it's the outdoor quality of golf? Do you know, the ability to have a certain amount of distance that gives them this confidence? Or do you think it's, no, we've played five or six tournaments. We're good. We know how to handle it. We have our protocols. We're good.
I think it's the latter one, and maybe the latter one owes something to the former one, because, you know, we're still learning how the virus moves around and so on. And I just get a sense that it's a confidence born of the, you know, the week to week grind now of the tour, that this has been going on for since the, you know, early to mid part of June, and it's gone well.
So my son and I were talking about this, about the U.S. Open being played in Winged Foot. And Michael, you had that question about the influence of DeChambeau on a course like that.
Well, if you just look at the leaderboard and looked at how distance played into the shaping of the leaderboard after the opening two rounds, Winged Foot, excuse me, could be at the just at the forefront of this question. If it's set up where guys like DeChambeau can just carry corners, and all of a sudden they're saying the rough did not actually deter good scores. They didn't necessarily get away with birdies. They had to settle for pars. Now, Winged Foot is more well defended on the green with the contours and around the greens. But if you're the USGA looking at how much distance played into that, I think you're a little bit worried if you have, say, I don't know, a dry spell in New York where you can't get the rough exactly where you want it in 6 weeks.
What do you think, Chuck?
Oh, I think absolutely. I think that's when the Thursday happened at this course, Harding Park out here, and I thought it was going to get mauled the whole time, and it wound up that it didn't. The reasons why kind of varied. Not quite sure if there's a concise explanation for why the course held its own, you know, as it went along. But, you know, I think that could be a big concern there.
Is DeChambeau feared by the PGA, that the rise of someone like this who may give rise to others like this, does that put fear in their hearts?
I don't think so, because I think he's, from what I can tell, hard to tell with no galleries, but it seems to me like he's a guy who gets clicks, for lack of a better terminology.
Yeah.
It just seems like he's a guy who, you know, who draws attention, and they need that. So I think that there's a mix there. Maybe you would be worried about it, you know, from a standpoint of kind of blunting the game in some way, of course, in a big way. But I think also, you know, there's the aspect where he's popular. He's popular in a very American way. You know, we like to be dazzled.
Wilbon hates him.
Well, and people also people love to hate watch him.
Yes.
And the PGA is in the business of selling the professionals' golf game, so they're going to like that. The USGA might be the group that fears him in terms of just devaluing skill.
There was yesterday, on the back nine of a major, at one point, there were like seven people tied at the top. It was really crowded. From a professional point of view, how do you sit in a room and watch that on television as opposed to try to follow somebody? Because there's 90 things happening in a very short period of time.
That's right. There's this is the 40th major I've gone to, and I still have a big guilt about that on Sunday you have to sit in there in the tent and watch it on TV. I went to one time where it was the one Mark Calcavecchia won at Troon in Scotland, and he made this chip in, and it was before the YouTube days, and I was out following somebody else, I think Norman maybe, and I've still never seen the chip in. Maybe I should go look at it sometime on the on the thing. You know, it's all these years later, I've never seen it. I had to describe it, but I only through his words, you know. If you go out there and follow somebody, you're going to miss something else. So there's this only one way to do it.
Yeah, the greatest of all time, Dan Jenkins, said, I can walk on Thursday, but, you know, this is my seat on Sunday. I mean, if it was good enough for Dan, it was good enough for everyone. By the way, and this is going to sound a little bit dramatic, but Brooks Koepka, you know, was a non-factor yesterday. He went backwards. He's the only one of the real contenders who went backwards. Is this the end of the Brooks Koepka mythology?
I don't think so, but boy, I was completely shocked by that. It was the last thing I would have thought to come out of that day. And, you know, you followed on Saturday night the comments he made about Dustin Johnson.
Yeah,
kind of a needling thing. I love that stuff. I think it adds to the game. I think if you want to do that, I thought it was playful in a way, in a slight way, and but also gamesmanship, you know. So I really liked it. But then to follow that up with that was really stunning, because here's a guy who, you know, he's held off Tiger when the crowds were roaring for him in St. Louis in 2018, DJ when the crowds were roaring for him, Beth Page in 2019. He's shown some real spine. So for him to go out and shoot, I believe, the second worst round played yesterday.
Oh, wow.
That was a stunning.
But since those you know, holds against those big names in the crowds, you also have dunking it a number 12 at Augusta when it looked like it was his win.
That's right.
Going into the final seven holes.
Right. That's right. He put it in the water. Like two other guys put it in the water, and Tiger did not put it in the water. Morikawa, obviously, the drive on 16 is huge. But the chip in on 14, when Michael and I were sitting here, Michael, you said to me, do you think he won the tournament right then? Yeah. I mean, what did you think, Chuck?
I thought the chip in on 14, the way it looked was what struck me. It looked like, you know, he has that look that does remind me a little bit of Tiger, how he expects these impossible shots to go in. And he was not surprised. He didn't leap. The way he looked after it went in just looked like all along that he had sort of mapped it out that way and thought it was, you know, plausible, possible to do that. He has really just compelled me with the way he walks around the course since I first started following him. Well, nobody's following him for all that long, but a few months ago. And, I thought that chip in, because as you recall, the approach was really insufficient right before that.
Yep.
It kind of died. And so to follow it up with this birdie when we think, you know, maybe he's in danger of a bogey here, and just the way he looked, there was a good chance that was going to go in.
What did the pros think of the course? Because it looked like, whatever else you wanted to say about it, the greens were receptive to a lot of long putts. I mean, it was not Augusta greens, right? I mean, did they like the course? Did they not like the course? Did they think it was worthy of a major?
I got the sense they adored the course and that it was definitely in the category, firmly in the category of worthy of a major. When you ask that, I think of what Paul Casey said about the 16th hole. He said, I love that the course gives us a hole like that, where there's a chance for somebody to do something like Morikawa did with driving the green. You know, and that it's in that position, you know, that the hole is in that crucial position in the day. I think they really liked the way that it was set up. They really liked, and I think it was Mickelson who called it a really underrated golf course, you know, among the sort of the San Francisco having Olympic, which has had the U.S. Open, and then Pebble just down the way. So, yeah, I think they, sometimes you can tell when they're just trying to get, you know, to make the good PR comment, or, you know, but I think they were effusive about it.
Mickelson, by the way, on TV on Saturday was better than anybody on TV in the last 20
and
years.
And Faldo knew it.
It was just...
Oh, Phil, why don't you try and shorten that swing?
Yeah, I mean, it was just so obvious that if Phil Mickelson wanted to do that, how good he would be. I'll get you out of here on this. Wilbon and I are paid to make great, broad, sweeping generalities with passion that we don't believe in at all. And Wilbon is now thinking there's a generational shift. But if you look at Hovland, and if you look at Wolf, and if you look at Morikawa, and other guys who are still in their 20s, albeit late 20s, it does feel like generationally something is happening. Do you see it that way?
Oh, absolutely. There was that time when four guys were at 10 under, four at 9 under, and four at 8 under, and I think eight of them were between 21 and 26, eight of the 12. Yeah, I think, and I was curious about what Wolf said. He said, he's 21, played at Oklahoma State, from Southern California, but that he thinks the caliber of the amateur golf now is just so elevated that people just arrive, as DeChambeau said of Morikawa, they arrive ready to win. They're already ready to win.
Yeah, I mean, Morikawa, and I haven't said this out loud, so I'll say it out loud. He shot 64 on a Sunday and made two spectacular shots on the back nine on a Sunday. Like, praise to him, right?
Right, and at a time when somebody was going to have to do something like that to get out of that logjam. And who was it going to be? And, you know, who was going to do something that was bold and that was going to enable him to elude that whole thicket there
when
the seven guys were tied at 10 under. It's so deeply impressive, the whole thing.
That's what I thought, too. Thanks. And thanks for doing this on Very Little Sleep. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you, Chuck.
Of course, anytime. Okay.
Chuck Culpepper, boys and girls, we will take a break. We'll come back with email and a jingle. I've got some email here that I saved over the last few weeks. I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Here comes Tony's mailbag. Got your emails, faxes, and your notes. Here comes Tony's mailbag. Gonna read some for all of you.
Tim Wildsmith of Nashville. We always say of Nashville because that's where the pros go when they want to sing. Okay, that'll do it for us today. But before we get to the mailbag, let me just say that I'm not bragging, babe, so don't put me down. But I got the fastest set of wheels in town. When something comes up to me, don't even try, because if I had a set of wings, man, I know she could fly. Let me just point this out. That's from Little Deuce Coop. And the Little Deuce Coop from the Beach Boys is always referred to as she, not he. And there's a particular lyric in there that I like. Because I'd never heard the phrase before, and it talks about how the little deuce coop can walk a thunderbird like she's standing still. Love that. Thanks to our guests today, Michael Wilbon and Chuck Culpepper of the Washington Post. Thanks as well to today's sponsor, Harry's Razors. And remember that you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Radio.com. As always, if you get the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. Nigel, you've got the Bethesda Bagels.
Yes, Bethesda Bagels. We love them. You will as well. Several locations around the D.C. area. We go to the one on Bethesda Avenue, 2819 Bethesda Avenue. You can find out at BethesdaBagels.com, the location nearest you. They're open every day from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. As I said, we love them, and we hope you will as well.
And Michael, we've got a Johnny O code, a new one.
Yes, you're going to like this one. Code Uncle Benny. That is UNC LEBE. NNY. They currently have a sale, so you can get sale on sale. So why don't check out their new partnership with Revo Sunglasses, which is a higher price point, but sale on sale, who knows?
Yeah, no, Uncle Benny. That's
Uncle
great.
Uncle Benny.
B-E-N-N-Y, by
This
the
is
way.
Your revenge.
Martin Taffazzoli writes, I am emailing you as I get ready to start medical school at Tulane. I was going to send you a School of Medicine hat, but I know you don't enjoy receiving junk. I'm writing to you today to request the official medical student of the Tony Kornheiser Show title. In exchange for this title, I will follow Carvel around and hold the phone up to him while he makes his picks. From Jim Flynn in Colebrook, Connecticut. Tony, I'm having a hard time accepting the cardboard cutouts at various games. Why don't they try huge posters of the album cover of Sgt. Pepper? That's somebody of my age bracket, and I like that. Brandon Borzelli, our old friend in Lebanon, New Jersey. When you sit down to watch the horse race, does Carol bring you a sandwich on a nice TV tray? Maybe you gnaw on potato chip as a young Michael Corleone enters the room to discuss important matters, upon which you announce they are small potatoes. Help with plants. This is really sort of interesting. This comes from Frank Rossi, formerly the turf guy, now just a grass guy. First time was helping diagnose a lawn disease in 09. Now I feel you need some help with your peppers. My best guess is you have blossom end rot, actually a result of a calcium deficiency. I teach horticulture at Cornell. I love Cornell, and horticulture is great there. I always love hearing about your golf and enjoyed your recent Golf Magazine article. Interestingly, I briefly advised Steve McCormick, your Columbia golf course superintendent, after he left SIU, the Salukis, when I was at UW-Madison as turf grass science professor. This is the connection.
He needs to come down and check out Columbia. We're having issues with the rye fairways.
Yes, we need it. The regular banter about golf and Michael's expert analysis of playing conditions is always a must listen. My research program at Cornell University studies golf putting green management, course playability, and conduct research with FootJoy, developing the next generation of greens-friendly footwear. Would you consider making us the Northeast Golf Turf Research and Education Program for the show? 100%. I also have a podcast for the last 5 years talking about golf and sports turf management. Frankly speaking, finally, what moved me to write was Michael's expert read on the Sunday Lawn Program, a company I've been involved in founding and currently serve as chief science officer. Is this for real? This is amazing. This is just amazing. Anyway, shout out to a local little Rob Reeks here in Trumansburg, New York, the heart of the Finger Lakes, Frank Rossi. I'm putting that away because I want to know in great depth
worried that I've been eating these peppers.
No, you haven't been. No, I've been throwing the peppers out. I've been throwing all of that stuff out. From Mike in Burke, Virginia, it's always nice to hear from Mike. Oh, there's a lengthy interview with Chris Lay Saliza in Connecticut Magazine. Lengthy? Well, that's the first time Chris Saliza has ever been associated with the phrase rather lengthy, isn't it? From Noah in Alameda, Georgia. A couple of years ago, prior to the time when COVID stopped all time and condemned all creepy old guys to their own attics, I had the immense horror of having an email read on your air. I had written in to ask your cruise advice on naming my second child a masculine child. I gave you a list of options. I gave a list of options to the woman to whom I'm related by marriage and we were considering. You guys were enormously helpful, specifically by having Isaacson give the whole thing a big thumbs down and Gary calling them all trust fund names. Well, that child is now a masculine 2-year-old named Easton and has a feminine sibling due to join the family in November. So I ask again for your sage wisdom in helping name my baby. You will notice that we skipped any ER names since you made your feelings very clear about that when young Walker arrived. Here's our list. Layla, Peyton, Jordan, Kinley, Brooklyn, and... Isla. What do you think?
These are no names that you know.
These are not names that I know. I know Jordan and Peyton, but I associated them as well with boys as with girls. I like Kinley. I like that. Brooklyn. That's Brooklyn Decker. I sort That's of right. like that too. One more. Rich Ottinger or Ettinger in Albany, New York. 60-second live read. Please riff about your personal experiences with Rich Ettinger. For example, talk about how you met him at Chatter and he gave you a challenge coin like token. He used at his old restaurant as a bounce-back coupon. Or discuss his one-hit wonder Ebola jingle he's still living off from 6 years ago. Required copy. Rich Ettinger is a loyal little, goes back to the ESPN days. He wrote a book called Do You Serve Food Here? I haven't read it, but I heard it was good. And choose one call to action. A, Rich Ettinger, and it's O-E-T, but I think it's Ettinger, not Ottinger, but I'm not sure, is a great emailer that I once said was sweet. Follow him on Twitter at Rich Otter, R-I-C-H-O-T-T-R, or B, visit richettinger.com to get his book today. I enjoy those things when people make fun of everything I do. And from Joe Carls. So when this whole virus thing started, I told you about tending bar at the Rolling Stone concert at U.S. Bank Stadium and if I should do it. Well, we all know how that turned out. So now I'm watching my twins get no love at all from the national media. What gives? And I know they're not your Nats, but come on, they're good. Do you think there's a chance? Sure, there's always a chance. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
Later, he gets the rebound, passes it to the man, shoots it, and boom goes the dynamite.
Goes the dynamite.
Hold up.
Get set, get cracking. Come forward, folks, don't backin'. In Seattle, nothing's lacking. Three cheers for the Kraken.
Oi, oi, oi.
An octopus and much more from Scandinavian folklore. Everybody wants her cephalopod like sea monster. Get your suitcase packing. Flames are fired up, ducks are quacking. Oh, the hat tricks they'll be stacking for the Kraken. No octopus on the ice if you're tracking. I guess they'll have to throw a Kraken. No drilling, no fracking. Mythological like a dragon. Send your welcome wagon for the Kraken. The Kraken. Wait, what's a Kraken? I don't know. Look it up.
Wishing to go back how it used to be. Dreaming tea.